Hi, it's Editing Matt here. Bit of illness this week, not able to record, so I've instead I've put together some of my favourite pictures from the distant past. There's like 700 episodes of this, we've been going for like a million years, so there's definitely going to be some that you've forgotten about. I certainly had. So here are some of our favourite pictures with some of our other music stopped. Don't worry about that. Some of our favourite guests as well. We've got Ash Routh, of course, Dave Bulmer, and we've got Rosemary Dax. These three pictures, I just love them. Because they all three of them go off in unlikely directions, and we love that when that happens. So enjoy those, and we will see you next week for some mascot movies.
From Jane Erith Magnet, we've got The People versus Godzilla.
Pretty cut and dry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very
cut and dry. Except, what was Godzilla accused of? Fraud.
That's what they got him in, and he was like Al Capone.
He didn't pay his tax.
Like, right, open up this film with the FBI, right?
Yeah.
The two FBI agents, one played by
muted trumpet plays in the background.
Yeah, one played by Tom Hanks, the other played by, Ryan Gosling, and like those two sort of like all American kind of guys, sort of really tall people, really tall people with hats on, and they're stood in the wreckage of the last Godzilla attack.
It's just like the two tallest people we can find. And just the FBI is just full of tall people, like impossibly tall. Like every frame they're in, you can't see their heads. It's a metaphor for how they're like a faceless organization.
Yeah, it's whenever you do see their heads, they've got their hats over their faces.
Yeah. They're stood in the wreckage of the latest Godzilla attack, and Tom Hanks. Is Ryan Gosling's getting really angry now. This is the 50th time Godzilla has attacked in the last like year or something. Every week, he comes out from the sea and just like.
We've got a lot of
every building.
I like how Godzilla sounds like a race car.
It's mainly just footage from Pacific Rim, except with like Godzilla's face just superimposed, just bouncing along wherever the kaiju's face would be.
A flat image.
Yeah.
Godzilla's a kaiju anyway.
Yeah, but he's a very specific kaiju.
I'm sorry, that's a little bit insensitive. Not all kaiju look alike, okay?
They do to me.
There are worm ones. There are like moth
things. More
races
separated to cut out.
There are like, you know, all sorts. God's sakes, Tom.
So anyway, Godzilla, right? He's coming up, blowing the thing. And Ryan Gosling's like, "This has got to stop, man. This has got to stop." And Tom Hanks is like, "No, we got to build a case file. You know how this works. We got to build a case up to like." Wreck him. We gotta bring him down. We're like, all we can get him on so far is destruction of major cities.
Also,
we need to get him
a
on
minor crime.
All these other crimes
and jaywalking, which you did quite often.
Like at the moment, we can only get him for 150 years in jail. That's not enough.
Not enough. Yeah, I'm thinking that it's quite a bureaucratic society. And that, like, in order to mobilize anything, they've got to build a really, really airtight case before the police will even move on anywhere to arrest anyone. They have to basically have been cut and dry, found guilty of it. So they've got to like make sure that they know for sure that Godzilla was there when the city was being destroyed. Problem is, the cities where it happened were destroyed, so they can't get any evidence.
So Ryan Gosling goes home to his wife, Anna Kendrick, and she's like, "Oh, rough day at work, honey.
yeah, this Godzilla guy, he's just really, really pissing me off.
It's the Zilla case.
It's the Zilla case. And she's like, oh, yeah, no. And she's like giving him a massage at the end of the bed, just like all very sort of like well lit. And then she's like, oh, well, I guess you hate Godzilla as much as I hate doing these tax returns. And then he's like, yes, I've got him. And then he storms up to Tom Hanks, who's working at his office late at night, because Tom Hanks doesn't have like a family to go home to. So he's just like up late at night, like every night. So he knows where he is. And Ryan Gosling's like slams a tax form on his thing as like, Godzilla doesn't pay taxes. And then Tom Hanks is like, Godzilla doesn't pay taxes? Godzilla doesn't pay taxes. And then like cut to courtroom. Godzilla sat in a chair just like, what the hell is this? What's going on? Obviously Godzilla Godzilla has the best lawyers. The best lawyer in the world, played by Willem Dafoe. Who's the judge played by? Mothra, the judge.
he's just got like this big curly wig over the top of these flapping constantly. Okay, I've got it. Mothra's got a little gavel in his antenna, and he's got a mobile little, like, you know, whatever the place where a judge sits is called, around him. Like, it's sort of strapped to him. So, like, he's floating around the courtroom and it's just sort of hovering around, just dropping sleeping spores on people and stuff. It's great. Zapping them as he flies over them with the static
electricity. Does Mothra shoot sleeping spores, or are you just confusing him with Butterfree?
Maybe. Maybe. To be honest, all butterflies look alike.
Much like Kaiju.
So
all Butterfree.
All right, so Willem Dafoe's character, who I'm going to call Stank Fever.
I'm Judge Stank Fever. I'm Attorney Stank Fever.
I'm a Stank Fever, attorney at law. What do you need from me?
So Stank Fever gets like his opening statement. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, okay, look over here. You see a Godzilla standing here. Yes, he doesn't pay taxes, but do any of us?
and then someone just says, "Yes," and then Willem Dafoe gets shackled.
Ah, shit! And he's actually the worst defense attorney of all time. the classic bad defense of, come on, we all do it, right?
maybe it's sort of, yeah, sure, he's a kaiju, but aren't we all at heart?
We can't forget about the biggest kaiju of all, man.
Yes, we're destroying habitats. And the kaiju's natural habitat is
the parallel dimension
of a destroyed city. by oppressing this kaiju, you will be depriving an endangered species of its natural habitat, broken human bodies, and the destruction of a civilization.
We've destroyed their homes. We fought them at every turn, every time they tried to make contact with us. I think we owe them some taxes.
And then it cuts to Ryan Gosling interrogating a witness. Your home was destroyed 2 weeks ago in Boston. Do you know who destroyed your home? And he's like, it was Godzilla. I know who. Can you see Godzilla anywhere in this courtroom? And he poisons, yes, it was him, it was Godzilla, it was Godzilla. And Godzilla's
he was
like,
there. He knocked over the Red Sox onto my house.
Mothra sees the courtroom's kicking off, so it just lasers down onto the gavel hammer smash thing. It's like, And the Corum shuts up. They know Mothra's in charge. Mothra's court is the best court. Like, nothing gets past Mothra.
That's why you've got to have a cut and dry case before you can get anyone to court, because Mothra doesn't give a shit. Mm. Like, if you bring him a shit case, if you lose a case against a defendant, the prosecution gets lasered to death.
Yeah, so Ryan Gosling really has this on the line, and he needs a character name. I'm thinking Hawk Kirshner.
Oh, my. Hawk Kirshner of who we know.
Yes. Ryan Hawk Kirshner is really, really terrified that he's going to get lasered to death if he doesn't solve this, if he doesn't get Godzilla put into the jail.
But I'm thinking they put Godzilla away, and as they're walking away from the court, Ryan Gosling and Tom Hanks have a conversation, just like, it hasn't ended here, you know. Godzilla will return. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow. And then the courthouse breaks through, and it's Godzilla storming around. And it's like, maybe it's today. Yeah, maybe it's today.
Bum, bum, bum.
What's going on everywhere? Like, the beasts could not be tamed.
Mothra's just there, like, fuck this shit, I'm out. Lasers the whole courtroom, just like glasses the earth. Just turns.
It raises the question, it's like, why would they even take Godzilla to court in the first place? Really?
Well, that's the problem. Because Mothra has this for the past 5 years, Mothra has just taken it upon himself to become a high court judge. Like, no one else is put in there because they don't want Mothra to kill anyone. Mothra has decided that he's called Jose Palomino and the high court judge. And so, you know, everyone's just terrified. And that's the problem. They're treading a fine line. Hawk Kirshner, attorney at law, is treading a fine line, trying to play Mothra off against Godzilla. And it kind of works, but kind of doesn't, because it results in the destruction of the nearby city.
And so everyone turns on Hawk and says, Hawk Kirshner, you caused the destruction of the city because you tried to accuse Godzilla. This is all your fault. We are putting you to death.
So Hawk Kirshner is put to death?
Yeah.
Hawk stamped Kirshner by Godzilla.
Has been put to... Yeah, that it was an official stamping by Godzilla. And it was... And then everyone just forgets about the whole taxes thing.
Like, Godzilla doesn't need to pay taxes. He's not a citizen.
And then as Godzilla walks off into the sea, he's like, there are two things certain in this life, death and taxes. I pay one of them. He's voiced by Morgan Freeman.
Godzilla voiced by Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, but only in the closing spiel, closing narration. Only two things are certain in this life. Death and taxes.
All right, so from Alex Not Safe for Work Keen, we've got Royal Rumble.
So again, we've got a royal family of
a
some kind.
A royal family, yeah.
Could it be like a modern fairy tale? Yeah. Where it's entirely set in like a wrestling franchise?
Sure. Ah. And a real royalty. It's almost like Prince and the Pauper. Mm. A real royalty, member of royal family in modern times, like kind of outdated concept, sort of monarchy type stuff. He's basically like eighth in line to the throne. Doesn't really matter like what he does. He's basically being told to keep his mouth shut. Don't be an embarrassment.
Yeah, be rich, look nice, stay quiet.
Exactly. And the three tenets of the royal family.
What were they?
Be rich.
Look nice, stay quiet.
Look nice, stay quiet, yeah.
Shh. They'll find out.
So, as he's like having to stay in his room basically, because he's like, for some reason, I don't know what, maybe he's I don't know.
Maybe it's his love of wrestling, and they're like, look, just box him away somewhere. We can't have this.
I feel, yes, I tell you what, the moral of this is going to be about, like...
Is it a prince who wants to be a wrestler?
Like,
and he can't because of societal constraints. Like,
maybe.
Wrestling's for the poor folk.
Yeah, it's bread and circuses. It's an opiate of the masses.
But Dad, I really want to be a wrestler.
Yeah, and they're embarrassed because he likes wrestling.
Yeah,
and like this is all going to be an allegory for like
homosexuality,
right? Yeah, like it's
what?
Yeah, I really want to be a wrestler, Dad.
No son of mine, no prince of this realm is going to be into wrestling.
says Brian Blessed the King.
No son of mine is going to be into wrestling. So there's like in the town square, there is like a wrestling ring that's always there, and it's like a
what if the prince is like in his tower and he's got like a pair of those little opera binoculars?
Oh.
He's watching the wrestling from.
They sort of have a trial by combat thing to sort out small disagreements.
Yes, yeah, that and all the knights in this world of wrestlers.
Yeah.
Jesus, like, modern day went straight out the window.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
Well,
it's fairy tale, but with a very modern wrestling ring stuck in the middle of it.
I like it.
And I think all the knights are wrestlers, so all of Brian Blessed's court are like luchadors.
I feel like we're in this world, we'd be bigging wrestling up too much to the point where Brian Blessed wouldn't have a problem with it if he was making use of this. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. Like, he's like, no royal has ever been a wrestler. We're here to...
Stay quiet.
Be rich
and look good.
Yes. Wrestlers, they're all... It's not like knighthood in sort of medieval fantasy times. It is... knighthood as in, like, they're knights. They're just there for war and fight.
I feel like you're missing a trick if you don't have wrestling be a theatrical thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you have wrestling be a combat-y thing that has a function, then I think this allegory doesn't work nearly as well.
I think you've got a scene, like, in the back of the wrestling hall where, like, all the wrestlers are getting into their wrestling gear and helping each other put their makeup on and stuff.
Mm.
And the prince, like, is like hiding behind a curtain. Yeah, it's like,
sneaking in.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
And then they're all super friendly and they're like, oh, come on in. Picking him up.
Mm, and
carrying him around.
And
no one really recognizes him because he hasn't been allowed out of the palace for a bit.
Because he's intentionally stopped looking good for his night out.
Yep. Yeah.
Disobeying one of the three tenants.
He's breaking the policy of the palace.
He's got a pet corgi sidekick.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That, you know.
And I think, like,
horse.
That's it. It's essentially just family comes to terms with the fact that their son wants to be a wrestler.
I just like the idea that this corgi behaves like a horse because because it worked well for Tangled to have a horse that behaves like a dog. So I figure, you know.
We have a corgi behaving like a horse.
Love it.
So good. How does this film end?
I don't want it to end in the overthrow of government again. I feel like it's too easy.
I think it's very much...
It's a personal story.
Is it like the end of How to Train Your Dragon, where the Brian Blessed comes to terms with it and starts wrestling? Or
I think, yeah.
Yeah, probably. Like,
that's why we've cast Brian Blessed.
Because that's a good scene.
So there's a governmental figure, right, who is going like, what do we really need these royals for? They're not in the government.
Mm.
They're not functioning in any way.
Yeah.
They seem to be staying fairly quiet, and like his dad's like role is being called into question as a king.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, we really need these figureheads. Like, it's David Tennant.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, do we really need these figureheads? I think maybe we don't. Maybe we should tear down the monarchy.
Does David Tennant love wrestling by any chance?
The people love wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is the thing. So when they, like, come to the door and, like... the doors burst outwards and there are streamers everywhere and people are like, the new wrestling federation, the Royal Rumble!
Yes,
yes.
And then Dave Hunter's like, oh, I hate wrestling, but everyone likes it! I can't defy the will of the people, I'm a Democrat!
Is Brian Blessed wrestling his son?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's...
But we have we have Brian Blessed be a wrestler in his youth. Like,
he was into it, but it was
a phase.
Yeah. But he was like, he turned away from that because it got him too much attention.
Yeah, and he was told to be quiet.
The family tenants say, and I think there was like a small
above the door
in Latin.
a small scuffle happened basically when he like injured someone in wrestling, and then suddenly that looked bad on the royal family, and so they locked that down. They were like, no, you can't do that. That's what happens when a family does this. This is like a slightly more Moana-y feel for the family, right? Because it's like a slightly more modern Disney feel where. Even the main bad guys have reasons that they feel like they do.
Yeah.
That's nice. that's nice.
So that was Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I like that. I like the fact that you've got the... Because at the end of all kids' movies, like all fairy tale ones, like you always have like your main characters, the center of attention, all good, right? And then you have all the side characters who were previously like... grumpy, they're getting like thrown into a pile of manure, or like they are joining in, or the very stern Rowan Atkinson, I'm your teacher and I'm going to be teaching you how to stay quiet, look good, and you know, sort of
that's all they learn. They don't have to read and write.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
And why wouldn't they? They need
and
to
then
stay quiet.
Even he's like Brian Blessed's wrestling him. So he's like,
I like
throwing
the idea of, like, you've got David Tennant sort of like grumpily on the sidelines while the wrestling's happening, and then like there's a bit of music in the background, you just see him sort of slowly start bopping to the beat.
Yeah. Like at the end of Princess Diaries.
And then he pulls off his waistcoat and he's got a luchador outfit on.
And Brian Blessed picks him up and throws him into the ring.
I think David Denton would sign up for that.
The Legend of the Diamond Skellington.
The Legend of the Diamond Skellington.
Yes.
Not Skeleton. Skellington.
That was from Ashley Brown. Got to us on Twitter. Thanks, Ashley.
That is an important distinction, because a skeleton is that monster that we all have hiding inside us. Whereas... Skellington is just the character from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Well, I'm starting to think I would like... Well, we can get to it. I've got an idea. Let's just say that the ton suffix is not only used in names. It's also used in other proper nouns. And that voice you can hear in the background, or in the foreground now, is Dave Bulmer, a.k.a. Demon Tomato Dave. Hey, Dave.
That's right. I've been in the background up until this moment, and now here I am, hoving into view.
he's burst into frame.
Like the lady on the prow of a ship. Are they on the prow of a ship? Which bit's the prow? I think it is.
I've got
an idea for this. I've got quite an exciting idea for this that I think is actually pretty cool.
Okay, go for it.
Well, imagine if there's an excavation going on, right? Think about whoever it is that's in charge of uncovering rare, you know, diamonds and stuff and stones and minerals from
like a prospector. Mm.
Yeah, whoever it is, like when imagine if now an amazing big new jewel was discovered. Whoever it is that would be there to do that is doing that. They're finding a really, really good diamond.
And have you got someone in mind?
Not really. I don't call actors to mind as easily as you do. Do you?
I've just got this sort of like old man with a here we go. I found a giant diamond, everybody.
Well, you mean J.K. Simmons?
Yes. J.K. Simmons.
So he's doing
has a big
this.
Beard.
But they've just started to uncover the surface of this diamond, right? And they're chipping away. They're like, oh, we've got to be careful. This is a big one. Chipping away. Wait a minute. This is really big. Chipping away. There's this huge. They've uncovered this massive, like, oval of chipped away where there's just this huge diamond. They keep chipping. And it's just never-ending. This thing's absolutely enormous. Then they get a call from the other side of the world where they're like, we found an amazing diamond. It's like poking out, like a pointed shape poking out, and they're like, oh, well, we've not found that. Well done. Well done. Keep chipping away.
And then sheepish phone call. So we've not found that.
Well, no. What it is,
yes, we haven't found it.
We weren't asking if you had. We just phoned to tell you we'd found this thing. but now you're saying that leads me to think you have, and you're trying to cover it up.
What it is that the people at the other end of the world, they've found this pointy, outy bit of diamond that's really huge for a diamond, but nothing compared to the massive expanse of diamond they've found in, you know, presumably America, because it's an American film. So, do we assume these are Hollywood films?
They can be wherever you
want.
Well,
let's assume that.
Shoot wave films.
Over on the other side of the world, they're trying to, like, they're being, like, good, whatever the profession is where you discover diamonds. So they're reporting it to all the other experts in that field, regardless of, like, international borders. They're not interested in that. They're just interested in the profession. But
J.K. Simmons, he's got some nous on it.
Yeah, well, because he's found the biggest thing diamond that's ever been found in the world, right? Yeah. So he's like, I can't even describe how big this is. I'm going to keep it under my hat for now. Back on the other end of the world, though, they keep chipping away. They call back again. We found another one. It's a little way across from the first one. It's smaller. It's poking out in the same way. J.K. Simmons is like, what? They keep chipping away. Anyway, long story short, it's a massive diamond skeleton that stretches all the way through the earth. On the other side of the world, they're finding the toes. He's got the top of the skull, right? And they realize what's going on here is, this is the skeleton of the earth. And it's that originally some giant or god or something died, and the earth congealed around it, crusted around the decaying remains.
It went through a meteorite belt and sort of like got all this gunk. It was orbiting the sun,
yeah,
and just sort of like stuff sucked towards it eventually.
Yeah, because it was so big that it was like it had a gravitational force. And so, yeah, the planet has grown around the remains of who or whatever this gigantic beast was that had a diamond skeleton.
So now we need an antagonist. Well, or is J.K. Simmons the antagonist, or do we sort
of... Well, no, the antagonist is that inside Mars is an onyx skeleton. And then, is it onyx, the cool black stuff?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
With obsidian?
I might mean obsidian. The one that's like a black stone, but with like cool space star colours inside it.
Oh.
Opal.
And it's inside Mars.
Opal. I think I'm thinking of opal. Hang on.
Oh, black opal.
Right. Google opal. Yeah, black opal.
There's
all
sorts
of opals. Oh, yeah. No,
check
that is
that out.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Right? So that's what the antagonist one is made of. And these two skeletons are waking up and they want to go to war, but they're trapped inside a planet, so they're going to use planet stuff at each other, like, you know, germs and stuff.
So how does J.K. Simmons talk this skeleton out of it?
Well, I mean, who else could?
But a prospector. But he knows all sorts about minerals, you see.
Yeah.
He knows everything there is to know. He's been doing this for years.
Yeah. So he's got almost, like, control. He's so good at knowing about minerals that he can just say the suggestive things that would make a skeleton made out of minerals want to do certain things. Like, he knows... Like, at the beginning of the film, his little catchphrase at the start is like, I know diamond inside out! I know diamond like back my own hand!
And he crawls, like, he eventually, like, they're like, oh my god, the earth is cracking, this skeleton is trying to wake up. He's like, well, there's only one thing I can do. He digs a hole down to the side of the skull and crawls into its ear canal.
Oh.
And then, like, has to talk it into...
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? Here's the thing, though. Because it's not a living... It is just the skeleton, so it doesn't actually have, like, ear apparatus. So what he does crawl into the ear canal just for the visual, for the, like, the viewers. But what he does is, earlier in the film, it's not, I know diamond, like, back my hand. It's, he has this thing where he's collecting diamond, right? And he's got, like, a little hammer or something. And he knows what bit of the diamond to just tap to make it do this beautiful ringing sound. And he does have this phrase that's like, you gotta know 'em to make 'em sing. So yes. At this point, he's inside the skull, and he's tapping bits of the inside of the skull to, like, make a beautiful chorus that inspires the diamond skeleton to act a certain way. Because he knows the song. He knows the diamond. I know the diamond song. I've been listening to the diamond song my whole life.
A song or a diamond.
Yeah. Like the idea of a giant diamond skeleton waking up inside the earth. Surely that should be the antagonist itself. That should be the threat itself. Because like surely once this skeleton wakes up, that's it. Game over.
There's a truth to be uncovered. Like, someone has discovered this skeleton before.
Yeah, because it has to be a legend.
Yeah, because he can't know instantly, because that's a deus ex machina, almost. Mm,
yeah.
He can't know instantly what to do with it. He has to overcome something.
Well, or the thing he has to overcome is the people between him and being able to ring the skeleton. He's not on the team who's allowed anywhere near it. Like, the military are in charge now.
Oh, he
finds the toes.
Off. Yes.
He finds the toes and...
crawls his way up.
Jason Bateman is the one who finds the skull and keeps it to himself because he wants to excavate it, right?
Yes, hang on. And J.K. Simmons does have to crawl all the way up, but it's not just him. He's got a friend who's, like, amazing at mining or whatever, and they have to go on a journey to the center of the earth type adventure through the earth. And it turns out there's whole civilizations of, like, ancient monsters living down there because they've been around
since
time.
As the world was building around this skeleton, the planet sort of grew, and there was all these civilizations built up, and then, like, as it grew more and more on this guy. But, yes!
Oh my God, yes!
But the idea I like of J.K. Simmons finding this skull and then realizing what it's about and then going to the government and the government being like, "You're crazy! This is ours for the taking. This is our diamond skeleton head. We'll use it.
They don't know.
Into weapons.
Yeah, but he only told them there was a skull. They don't know there's a whole skeleton all the way through the planet. So he has that information and can act on that.
Well, so he goes down. He goes down to the toes.
Yeah, to his friend.
To the other
dig
site. To his friend, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
He's like, "I've been mining all my life. Mining is the best thing. I saved the world from a meteor with mining at one time."
Come on, Bruce Willis. Let's go into the.
All right, King Candy. Calm down.
Okay.
Okay!
We have to make our way up to the head!
We're really gonna have to do it! Okay, so J.K. Simmons is doing Alan Tudyk's King Candy / the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland's voice. He's like, "Okay, here we go!"
No, that's the voice of the skeleton.
Yes!
Okay, boys.
I been asleep for a long time.
You're sitting in my ear canal.
All I want to do now is stretch my arms. No.
China sinks into the sea. I just want to stretch my arms.
Sorry, boy. But it's so cramped in here.
Maybe that's the thing. He gets his arms free and he destroys like half of civilization. Like, well, okay, they have to talk him into taking them to another planet, letting them off in order to fight the opal skeleton in Mars.
Oh, I hate that opal skeleton. Never again. I said I'd never see that guy again.
He stole my music box back when we were kids.
Music box.
Well, that's why they wake him up by singing to him.
All right.
Because
he
learned. I just love music. The music of the planets. They realise that Holst is the way to wake him up.
I was just thinking that.
Gustav Holst's Planet Suite is the and of course there's someone on Mars who's in the near future, yeah. There's someone on Mars playing the Mars music to the Opal One to wake him up already.
Well, no, they beam it to the Mars rover.
<That's>, like, yes, there's a whole conspiracy in the military. They already knew that there was this thing in Mars. Didn't realize there was a diamond one in Earth.
You know that bit in the beginning of Independence Day where they're getting the weird message, the weird sound, yeah. Like brr, brr, brr. They go, it's that scene, but it's like, listen to this, sir, we've never heard anything like it, and it's, oh boy, I love this tune. Because the Opal skeleton's got the same voice.
Oh boy, I love this tune. He's Fred Schneider. He's more like, ah, hey there, I got me a Chrysler, I like got the holster. I want Fred Schneider to voice everything, to be honest, but also, like, more films should have King Candy voices in them. I think Wreck-It Ralph was really a triumph in that respect. For bringing it back.
Yeah. One of the... my first video that I ever had was of H.R. Puffin Stuff, which was a 1960s or 70s, don't know which, TV show in America. And there was a character in that that was an Edwin impression. So, like, at least until then, that was one of the voices people did. And now we're in a brave new world where, once again, that's one of the voices you can do.
Well, it's the lion also from Wizard of Oz.
I mean, I guess.
Oh boy! So that's
there's a similarity there, isn't there? Yeah. He's not as extreme as old Ed.
No, of course not.
I'm so scared. Yeah.
I'm so scared.
Yeah.
Of everything. The final climax of the film. Do you suppose you've got this scene from space of him like swimming, like breaststroke?
Yeah.
This skeleton, because he's got his arms out. Yeah. Of the Earth.
And at this point, they've got it's like they're wearing the planets like a jacket.
Yeah.
They've just got their legs and arms and head just poking out. And they're just swimming through space.
He swims towards Mars.
And they're just swatting each other. They're just slapping each other in the face.
And like the thing holding back the diamond skeleton is he has to try and preserve the people on his planet. Whereas Mars killed his long ago.
Yeah.
Because he's the evil one.
Yeah,
because he wants to be alone with his music box. He's a jealous god.
He had to try and preserve the people on his planet by swimming away from the sun, freezing them in the process.
Yeah.
They're all frozen while this battle's happening, and then he goes back once it's over, and they all sort of thaw out, just like, oh, it's so glad it's over. We won!
Well, I like the idea that way back in the day, this is going to be in a kind of like a flashback montage. Way back in the day, these two brother skeletons, they were fine, and then Diamond Skeleton got a music box, and he loved it so much. It had Holst Planet Suite for some reason, and he loved it so much, and it was his. You know, it was given to him, so he hid it in the sun, and went to sleep. For eons, but the Onyx skeleton was a jealous skeleton. He wanted the music box for himself, but he already had a very high functioning civilization on his back.
Yeah.
But he wanted the music box so much he incinerated all of his people to seize it from the sun, and therefore became the bad one. And has been alive all this time waiting for the diamond skeleton.
But he never realized all this time was that the people on Mars had invented music boxes and could have just made them a new one if he'd asked.
Yeah, well, Holst was originally from Mars.
Oh, was he? Right. So Holst literally was, at some point during this, Holst, knowing the actual music of that the different planets favoured, ended up on Earth and tried to tell us. He tried to seed it in history so that we would have the means to communicate with the different planets. So the end of the story is that we broadcast the planet suite, and all the planets come in because they know that Mars skeleton is kind of a dodgy guy.
They all wake up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, you know, Saturn's got a skirt.
And every single one of them is a different impression of like classic Hollywood guy.
Yes. Yep. You got your
Humphrey Bogarts.
Yeah, you got your Humphrey Bogarts. You got your Vincent Prices.
Yeah.
You've got your
Pluto the Vincent Price.
You've got the sort of Jim Cummings wonderful thing about Tigger. Hey ho. The kind of like semi Yiddish. Of course, you know, he was sort of
what's
when
the one,
Mickey
what's
Mouse.
The one that talks like that's got a slightly sinister voice.
People used to do an impression of him a lot.
It's Vincent Price, I think.
No, it's before him.
I know who you're talking about. Like, he used to be in a lot of radio drama.
No, who am I thinking of? Oh, Peter Lorre. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Peter Lorre.
Is that him? I think that's like, the guy who people were doing an impression of
when they did that voice.
But his voice wasn't actually like that, but it just became like that's the impression of him.
He was sort of American. He was in a lot of American sort of adventure radio stuff,
right?
Like the old style, Lone Ranger stuff, you know. That's just oft parodied now because the bad guys always sound like that.
Well, there you go. So there you go. So that's one of the planets.
Yep. which one? Which one? That's the question.
I don't
know. It's either Uranus or Pluto, surely.
Vincent Price is Pluto. He comes from the back and is like, hello there, everyone. Yes, it's me, Pluto.
The planet Pluto.
the planet Pluto.
Planet.
I... Definitely a planet.
All the other skeletons turn around and go, get lost, Pluto, you're not a planet. Oh.
But I want to be part of your gang. I can sing as well with the music box.
La la la. La la la. Ba 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 bum. Ba 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 ba. Is it completely tuneless, but also sort of like, you know, he's trying to do Holst. He's doing his best.
Bless.
Anyway, bless. So the planets swim off into the distance as friends. They all tow the sun along with us. So
well, the sun would be the equivalent of their like, you know, village fire in an old village. Except because it's space, and so we don't understand how the tech works, they do take it with them, because that's how they survive. So it just goes with them.
They're all drifting away from galactic, you know, the universe's central point. It's a grand. What we don't know is it's a grand pilgrimage into the stars, and they're like, you know what, we're better off together than alone. It's a message of unity at the end there.
Right, but against the Earth.
Well, no, I think they take Earth with them.
Oh, okay.
Why not?
Oh, they do. Ah, oh, okay.
So that they're not leaving Earth without a sun, and we all freeze to death. I mean, that would be a ending to the film.
I feel as if we've neglected the adventure part of this film. Like,
it's true.
Right. This is all, like, we've spent way too much time on the end of the aftermath.
The last 15 minutes,
the adventure was J.K. Simmons, Bruce Willis, travelling up
and
the
he's
leg
not playing a
and
character.
Body of...
He's not playing a character. He's Bruce Willis in this.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
He knows a lot about mining because he was in...
in a film.
Armageddon.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just like, yep, mining's brilliant. I love it. I've been doing it on my weekends since I finished Armageddon.
Yes.
Adventure is the civilizations they encounter as they travel through the center of the Earth.
Yes. Yeah, because they're going layer by layer by layer,
yeah.
And there's a whole civilization of like mole creatures.
And when you get to the central most layers, they're like as you go deeper, their myths are more accurate.
Yeah, so they know a little bit more about where they came from. So they're like the one near the end. One of them like really hates Poe for no reason.
Yeah,
they've just got maps like star charts with it just crossed out, or with an arrow that just says dweeb.
And they're the ones that have been trying to get it struck off as a planet.
Yeah.
Their influence has reached the human race somehow.
They are actually the first ring, because they are the lizard people who are currently the Illuminati in our world.
Yeah.
That's
what David Icke's noticed. He got the wrong end of the stick. It's not that like the Queen is one of them, but they are exist. They do exist. They live under the planet, and now and then they just try and alter things, and you know. Usually they do it from afar, they can control everyone in the layers outside them. Not control, but, you know, they can seed ideas to their culture.
Yeah.
But sometimes if someone really isn't towing the line, then they'll send an agent out. And it's that. That's the person who, like, told science that Pluto isn't a planet.
It was Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm not sure that's true, but...
Is he not Is he not necessarily a lizard person from the center? No.
You're not sure whether Neil deGrasse Tyson is a member of the Illuminati who is a lizard person who told everyone Pluto is not a planet.
Because it could go either way.
He didn't want a diamond skeleton that's encased in Earth to not be friends with Pluto when it arrives.
It could go either way. 50-50,
case
I'd say.
Case closed.
Look,
flip a coin.
Never mind any of that. Which planet is played by Tim Curry?
That'd be Venus. No, Mercury, because he's such
Mercury,
poverty
yeah.
right now.
He's such... Also, he's a mercurial wit.
Oh. Whoa. Ooh.
So, he's almost a sweet talker. Him and Venus have an on-again, off-again relationship. Because Venus is obviously the woman one.
Yeah, that's the woman
Holst.
One. Played by who?
Anna Kendrick.
You like? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. It's always Anna Kendrick. We're back to the last 15 minutes of the film again.
Yeah.
We keep
drifting it is
off
undoubtedly
to this beautiful moment.
It's undoubtedly the most interesting moment of the film. Yes. But
all right then, hang on then. So
we've already sort of glanced over the middle part.
Well, the middle part. Someone in the middle, one of the people in the Earth, it doesn't have to be the central most race, but someone. It probably is the central most race. No, it probably isn't. It's probably one of the outer. It's probably the outermost race. They have found the skull, and that's why it's got to be the outermost race, because that's where the skull is. And they are going to use it because they've heard about the myths that have bubbled up from the innermost races. They don't know about them, but you know they've heard them. The myths have made their way up to them, and they're aware that out in space is the opal skeleton. They've got some kind of character that they're scared of, some sort of devil character.
Yeah.
They've realized that the head of the skeleton is pointing directly towards Mars at a certain time, and they're going to use it to direct a giant laser to destroy Mars. But what they don't realize, well, they might realize it, but it doesn't affect them in the slightest, is that it firing that laser will strip the surface of the planet off.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to stop them.
And thereby releasing the opal skeleton. And so they're the...
Well, what I meant was it would strip off the surface of the Earth. But yeah, you're quite right. It'll also... Yeah, they're wrong. It'll strip off the surface of Mars and release the opal skeleton, wake it up, and destroy Earth at the same time. So all is lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they go past them and they're like, sounds like a good idea. We're going to keep going down, though.
Yeah.
And then they get to the next race and they find out that that's a terrible idea. And they're like, no, the door's already closed. The very center of the Earth, they find somewhere around the heart region, they find the original peoples who took up residence in the ribcage first. And they teach them the old ways, which are that you can't try and awaken the skeleton because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And then they've got to go out and stop the mole creatures, who I've decided are the youngest race apart from humans.
We've got a race of beavers on the first layer.
Well, they're the people who found the layer. I don't think it would be moles though, because they're too Earth-like. They'd be lava people, wouldn't they?
Yeah, maybe.
That was the legend of the Diamond Skellington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that?
And then, and of course, when the opal skeleton and the diamond skeleton fight, of course, you know, leaning towards what our contributor of the name was sort of referencing, everyone in the world has to get in a fridge in order to survive the fight.
Yeah, and of course, the place, the promised land at the center of the Earth, in the heart of the skeleton, is called Skellington.
Oh, of course.
So there you go. It's full circle. Lost civilization of Skellington there.
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. That's your lot, isn't it? that's the podcast. So hope you enjoyed it. I did. I had a nice time listening back to all those memories that you and I have gone through together, eh? Anyway, if you're interested in giving us titles, then you know where to go. Of course, that's at Live to Pitch Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Live to Pitch Podcast. And you know about the Patreon, which is at patreon.com/Live to Pitch Podcast. That's a place, you know it, you can give us money each month. Or just follow us to give us titles over there. And if you do give us money each month, you can get bonus pictures and also get your name read out. So I would like to say thank you to Spanky. Ross Originals bemoaning the lack of gay rep in wolf movies. Spending the night in A&E after eating out of the worm bucket meal you've been breeding since Dune released. Stephen D. Thomas. Oh crap, it's a new month and still no orcs or dorks. Guess you'll just have to listen to the Christmas one again. Fingers to hand. The truth must be known. Stanley Kubrick faked this Patreon with mirrors and old disposable cameras. Lisan Al-Ghaib is a size queen. James Delaney. Worm chanting. Paul. 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 You chanting. Muad'Dib. 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 The entire theatre chanting. Dune the movie. That one mysterious benefactor you will always see in the corner of your eye, but you're never sure whether they're really there. The name's Gumboot. Ptolemy Gumboot. Chicago PD. Retired. There. See. A confession. Case closed. The difference between me and Darth Vader is that I still have my arms and legs, and he had the will to live. Wish I'd gone to gut level now. Hell, even climbing would be better than this downpour of offal. Brent Black. Question box. Retired. Thanks, Inspector. You did it. Lock them up and throw the prison into Arrakis. And young Paul Atreides, never flitting, still is sitting, on the bust of Matthew, just above my chamber door, and his eyes have all the seeming of a Joseph Hegarty, that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er them streaming throws their podcast upon the floor. And my soul from out that shadow lies floating on the floor, perched, sat, considered, Matt, a bird, the inspector, a sandworm, nevermore. The serial dragon and family. You want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it. Deny human, deny human, deny human. Lexator Parsnak and his revolving spice mines. You want the Patreon name length secret? We have a Bene Gesserit who just shouts longer. Hark, the herald angels sing of the second Patreon account I created to join this stupid ARG. Duncan Idaho being a brat and saying no when the big lady tells him what to do. Zoe... wearing a cone of silence to the cinema, and everybody thinks I'm just a fucking puppy. You idiots are all gonna get caught by the voice. Abeds being cancelled commie for Hyde's Pinko time to Tom. Under who? This is the news. Kendrick Lamar escalates Drake feud on diss track. Alright, that's the lot. So thank you to all of you who are part of that Patreon, but also thank you for listening, and we shall see you next week. Remember who pitched it.